content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jen Rogers from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from Catster.com and Dogster Magazine. On today's program, I'll begin with some articles from Catster.com. We'll start with an article titled, Grooming Your Cat, Do's, Don'ts, and Disasters, by Philip Milnar. How to bring pro-level grooming to your feline at home. Everyone knows that cats are wonderfully self-sufficient creatures. Left to their own devices in a safe environment, your favorite feline will happily snooze, snack, and nap her way through the day, complete with partaking in self-care grooming sessions when needed. But that doesn't mean our kitty pals don't need a little extra human assistance and a few key grooming departments. Here's how to get a grip on brushing, nail clipping, and eye and ear maintenance for your cat. How to brush your cat. Unless you're cohabiting with one of those futuristic-looking hairless cats, every feline needs brushing to help remove dirt particles and dead hair. The ASPCA recommends doing this once or twice a week, although if you're dealing with a long-haired kitty, you'll want to up that to every couple of days. During these moments, the owner can brush out a tremendous amount of undercoat, says Erica Ayala, a certified master cat groomer at Kitty Pride Cat Grooming in New York City, whose own resident felines are a couple of Persians named Samo and Sanjay. That's less hair the cat will ingest when they attempt to groom themselves. Ingested hair can cause icky hairballs. Regular grooming sessions can also become a bonding experience between you and your cat. Erica adds that they also allow you to spot anomalies such as mats and other skin and coat issues before they become a big, dangerous, and expensive problem. Focusing on brushing tactics, Erica says to strategize beforehand. This can mean setting the mood by spraying feline pheromones in the air. Laying out all of your grooming brushes, Erica recommends a pin brush with bristles on the other side. Making sure you approach your cat in a calm and relaxed manner. Most cats love their faces, necks, heads, back, and sides brushed, says Erica, but it's not uncommon for cats to get annoyed when you attempt to brush their underside. She also points out that long-haired kitties need to have their armpits, thighs, and tushy brushed to avoid mats. Don't brush all the easy parts and forget to brush the underside, she says. If your cat does develop mats and you're attempting to remove them yourself, it's vital to be gentle and precise. Cats can be very reactive and they have incredibly thin skin, Erica says. It's very easy to injure a cat if you don't know what you're doing. I've seen many cats with V-shaped wounds because the owner attempted to cut mats out with scissors themselves. During house calls, Erica has discovered frail elderly cats who were so matted they had to undergo multiple visits to remove the mat. Grooms like that are super heartbreaking, but also incredibly rewarding when completed, she says. How to clean eyes and ears. It's okay to get your cat's eyes when they occasionally get dirty, Erica says. Brachycephalic cats, or flat and smush-faced cats, are famous for getting dirty eyes because their heads are so oddly shaped. When it comes to ocular cleaning process, Erica recommends a simple saline solution because it removes discoloring better than plain water alone. She adds that if you have a Persian cat, cleaning dirty eyes every day is a reality and not something necessarily to worry too much about. Adrian Kawamura, the founder of the City Kitty franchise, points out that if you notice any unusual amounts of drainage in or around your feline's eyes, it's always a good idea to consult with your veterinarian, as eye herpes is a common issue in cats. Feline ears can be cleaned with diluted hydrogen peroxide, cotton pads, or cotton balls. But err on the side of caution. As Adrian points out, only clean the parts you can see, and if there's unusual debris or a foul odor, it's time to see your veterinarian. Erica agrees with a restrained approach to tackling ears. I think some well-meaning people overclean. If debris is visible in the ear, it's okay to wipe it off, but when in doubt, have a vet check it out. How to clip your cat's nails. Scratching is vital behavior for a cat's physical, emotional, and mental well-being, so keep their nails well-conditioned. Nails continue to grow on your cat, so clipping them will prevent the nails from growing into the pads of the feet, which can cause discomfort, pain, and even possible infection, says Adrian Kawamura, who is the guardian of three Persians named Ferguson, Kalani, and Lancelot. Older cats can sometimes display bony changes in the feet due to arthritis, causing the nails to grow in a more circular fashion. So for elderly cats, it's important to keep them short. Adrian recommends clipping nails once a month for most cats and upping the routine to twice a month for kittens and seniors. When you start clipping your cat's nails, it's crucial to always cut before reaching the quick, the pink part of the nail. Just trim the sharp tip of the claw. Never trim near or below the quick. Also, cutting nails vertically ensures that you don't mash the nail and splinter it, Adrian says. Dedicated cat or even bird clippers are advised, as they're smaller than the dog clippers you might find at your local pet store. Or if your cat doesn't mind it, try using a Dremel nail grinder. Stay vigilant. If during the nail clipping process you spot any blood, use Styptic powder applied to the tip of the nail. Adrian recommends calm assertiveness as you approach to grooming your cat. Reward with treats after successful session, and always stop if your feline appears to be getting too aggressive. To bathe or not to bathe. Cats are notorious for hating water, but many people suggest they need regular bathing. What's the real deal? The ASPCA recommends that most cats do not need to take baths under normal circumstances. If your feline appears to have gotten into shenanigans involving an odorous or sticky substance, yes, it's bath time. If you've adopted a hairless cat, you need to bathe him once a week. And if your cat ends up with fleas, yep, you'll need to be taking a visit to the tub. Next, we'll move on to an article titled The Orange Tabby Cat, 8 Fun Facts by Denise Laveau. We've compiled a few facts about the orange tabby cat that addresses common questions like, are all orange cats tabbies? And are all orange tabby cats male? Morris and Garfield are just a few of the iconic orange tabby cats that are part of our culture's collective cat consciousness. It's not hard to know why. Their big, bold, and brightly colored coats is one reason. But as anyone who can attest who's lived with an orange tabby, it's really their personalities that make them stars. They're infinitely fascinating felines, so here are 8 fun facts about the awesome orange tabby cat. 1. First, the truth about tabbies. It's actually a coat pattern, not a breed. Specifically, the presence of stripes denotes a tabby cat. And there are 5 different tabby configurations. Classic tabby, mackerel tabby, spotted tabby, ticked tabby, and patch tabby. 2. All orange cats are tabbies. Go ahead, Google orange cats. They're all tabbies. Even if their stripes are faint, they're there. So while all orange cats are tabbies, not every tabby is orange. 3. Is every orange tabby cat male? While it's true that a higher percentage of orange tabbies are male, the ratio is actually about 80% to 20% female. And it's not some sort of magic, it's genetics. The X chromosome is responsible for the orange coloring. Females possess 2 X's and males possess XY. Hence, a female orange tabby cat requires the sire and the dam to pass on the orange genes, but males only need the orange genes from their mother. 4. What does the orange tabby cat M stand for? One of the most distinctive markings on the orange tabby is the M above his eyes. This is seen in all types of tabbies, so it's not just the orange kitties that boast these cool peeper accoutrements. Tabby stripes are probably predominant because of their camouflage properties, so it's most likely the markings help them hide in the wild. Depending on the orange tabby's parental decor choices, this may or may not be the case for the modern tabby. 5. Orange tabbies tend to talk a lot. National Geographic reports that personality is tied to a cat's coat color. Guess who won anecdotally most gregarious? Of course, every cat's personality is different, but Amy Wester has lived with many different cats over the years, and Momo, short for you know it, Motormouth, is a testament to the findings. He's the most affectionate and happiest cat, says Amy. When we rescued him 11 years ago, his constant loud purring could be heard through the house. His name is fitting, and even more so today. Momo hasn't stopped purring since we got him. 6. Orange tabbies are known for being Velcro cats. Every cat is an individual, but orange cats have a reputation for being snuggly attention lovers. In addition to being a real purr machine, Momo the orange tabby cat seeks affection every waking hour from Amy and then some. His frequent, less than stealthy move is to climb up on her pillow and start climbing around her head for attention. It makes no difference whether she's awake or not. Karen Stevenson echoes these sentiments. Her house has been filled with all sorts of companion animals for 2 decades, and yet there's one snuggle monster who is most in your face when seeking some loving. Since the first day my husband brought home Tiger, he's been the most loving animal, says Karen. Even 18 years later, Tiger's nightly habit of sleeping on her head is only broken when she's traveling. He also likes to sit and stare at Karen's husband, Brett. I don't know why he does it, but it's part of what makes him so adorable. 7. Winston Churchill famously owned an orange tabby cat. Maybe it's a little too fitting that the man who said never, never, never give up owned an orange tabby cat. That's right, Winston Churchill shared his life with an orange tabby cat called Tango. He was probably just trying to get some sleep in his own bed when he came up with the famous line. 8. Orange tabbies are the color of appetite. What? The psychology of colors arguably started with Goethe. His writing asserts that red-yellow is associated with warmth and gladness. He also claimed that yellow-red possesses the highest energy, apparently causing folks in the days of yore to freak out if they saw an orangey cloak on a dreary day. Contemporary findings include that orange is the color of adventure, social communication, and yes, stimulating the appetite. Howard Johnson was onto something. While maybe a broad brush to paint all orange tabbies in, we can see that there's definitely an anecdotal correlation between their coat colors and their personalities. Now we know exactly why Garfield couldn't resist the lasagna. So, whether they're trying to hog the pillow so you'll wake up and pet them, or purring up a storm so you'll pick up and pet them, there's one thing we know for sure. Orange tabby cats are as bright, beautiful, and varied as their coats. And we'll finish our articles from Catster.com with an article titled Worldwide Veterinary Services International Training Center by Dr. Arnold Plotnick. Learn about the work a Thai clinic is doing to help stray street cats and dogs. There is no shortage of stray cats and dogs in Thailand, and like all street animals, they need looking after. Doing his fair share is Dr. Giacomo Miglio, Clinical Director at the Worldwide Veterinary Services International Training Center, ITC, in Chiang Mai. With a staff of 4 talented veterinarians and several proficient veterinary nurses and assistants, the ITC has earned an excellent reputation for its care of Chiang Mai's cat and dog population. The center plays an important community role, including sterilizing and treating sick and injured dogs and cats from across Chiang Mai, running outreach projects in local villages, and training veterinarians and veterinary students from all over the world. Last October, I met Ian Clark, the ITC's Director of Operations, where he learned of my expertise in and my great fondness for cats. We discussed the possibility of my participation in a future feline spay-neuter project. My trip to Thailand happened in early March 2019. At the ITC, I met Dr. Miglio, was given a tour of their clinic, dog shelter, and surgery area. Spaying and neutering constitutes a large part of what the center does, as evidenced by the 6 operating tables in the surgery suite. Local cat rescue groups in Chiang Mai are always overrun with cats in need. They were notified of the sterilization project in advance, and they gratefully supplied us with cats. After a desperately needed good night's sleep, my flight from Thailand lasted nearly 20 hours. My flight to Thailand lasted nearly 20 hours. I arrived at the center early the next morning, rested and ready. The surgery suite was already abuzz. Technicians and assistants worked together in perfect coordination, anesthetizing, shaving, and prepping the cats for their procedures. One of the technicians connected his cell phone to a Bluetooth speaker, and as the room filled with the sound of Thai pop, and to my surprise, American country music, the sterilizations commenced. Like a well-choreographed ballet, cats were brought into the operating table, sterilized, taken to the recovery area, and new cats were brought in. Before you could blink, a dozen cats were peacefully sleeping off their anesthetic under the watchful eye of a technician. As part of my visit, I agreed to give a slide presentation to the doctors on staff. I spoke about some common feline conditions, diabetes, hyperthyroidism, kidney disease, inflammatory bowel disease, and I also presented photos of my most memorable cases from my feline-only practice in New York City. The differences between what I might encounter daily in my urban Western practice and what these veterinarians see and experience in rural Chiang Mai couldn't be any more stark, and it provoked a fun and stimulating discussion. The Worldwide Veterinary Service sponsors dozens of international projects every year, treating cats, dogs, horses, donkeys, and all manner of wildlife. This was my second international project with them, but certainly not my last. I form lasting friendships with dedicated, like-minded people, and the satisfaction derived from helping care for these animals in need is immeasurable. Now we'll move on to Dogster Magazine, and we'll start with a seasonal recipe. for this month of October, titled Witchy Finger Snacks by Samantha Myers. It's my favorite time of the year, and that means my house is covered in Halloween decor. For a month, I can justify using pumpkin in every meal. If things look like a little spiderweb covered on the food comes out, looking a little creepier than usual, no one can judge me, at least not without a rules of fall discussion. So it should be no surprise that my dogs get in on the action as well. These spooky treats are a favorite at our annual Halloween party. With a dog-friendly base, the dogs can now howl in Halloween delight too. What you'll need. 1/2 cup of canned pumpkin, not pumpkin pie mix. 1/4 cup peanut butter with no xylitol in ingredients. 1 egg. 2 to 2.5 cups whole wheat flour. Strawberry or raspberry jam / jelly with no sugar or artificial sweeteners added, and unsalted peanuts. Directions. 1. In a mixer or with a hand blender, blend pumpkin, peanut butter, and egg. 2. Add in flour slowly. You want your mixture to be smooth and well mixed. Add more or less flour to get your desired consistency. 3. Take out a piece of dough and roll into a small half-inch ball. 4. Stretch into a long finger shape, adding dents to mimic the shape of a human finger. 5. Bake at 350 degrees Fahrenheit for 20 minutes or until golden brown. 6. When the cookies are cool, dab on a little jelly to one end and top it with 1/2 peanut. To continue on our grooming theme today, we'll read an article titled Why Do Dogs Need Their Nail Trimmed? By Martha M. Everett. I don't know who dreaded nail trimming more, my dog or me. He fought it tooth and nail, making it a struggle to keep his nails from becoming talons. Just why do dogs need their nail trimmed? When nails are left unattended, they can and will become a problem for the dog, says Leslie Weeks, director of the National Groomer Association of Canada. Long nails can become painful, and if really left unattended, curl and grow into the pads, not to mention the damage the nails can cause to the household by scratching the floor, tearing of fabrics, and getting caught in the loops of the carpet, causing the animal to stumble or fall. Untrimmed claws can scratch the dog, other animals, and people. They can also become caught in the cracks of sidewalks and patio boards. This may cause the nail to be split, ripped out, or cracked, says Leslie, an author, professional groomer, and master grooming instructor. Beyond the feet, more trouble can be afoot. Long nails raise the toes off the ground without, in themselves, possessing enough strength to support the foot, Leslie says. This puts pressure on the toes, shifting the dog's weight and weakening the foot's arch. A splayed foot not only offers less traction, but it also alters alignment and interferes with movement. It will affect their gait, and this in turn can pose problems for their joints as the body tries to adjust, Leslie warns. Click clack. Walking your dog on hard, rough surfaces like concrete can help file down nails, but they still need trimming. Dew claws, the 5th toe raised up on the inside of the leg, should be clipped too. Nails grow at different rates depending on the dog, breed, and lifestyle. In general, nail cutting should be done once a week for puppies and once a month for dogs. Don't wait for the click-clack sound on your floors. When this happens, you are well overdue to have your pet's nails trimmed, Leslie says. Don't nick the quick. Dog nails are made of the protein keratin, and like human nails, cutting them doesn't hurt. But beware of the quick, also spelled quick, K-W-I-K, that runs down the center of each nail. The tissue contains nerves and blood vessels. If you nick the quick, it causes pain and bleeding, thus the phrase cut to the quick. White translucent nails reveal a pink-colored quick. On black nails, the quick can be seen by looking up the hollow of the nail from below. There is no difference between clear and dark nails. However, it's much easier to see the quick of the animal with clear nails, Leslie says. Frequent nail cutting will force the quick to retract, allowing you to have more off each time you trim the nail. Did you know? The fur and skin surrounding a dog's nails determine their color. A light-colored paw generally has white nails, while darker paws usually produce black nails. Therefore, it's possible for a dog with different colors on his feet to have some white nails, some black, and some bicolored, even on the same foot. Must-have tools. Dog nails are different from human nails in shape and strength, so always use tools designed for dogs and the correct tool for your dog's size. These tools can hurt if used incorrectly, so learn how to use them first. Scissor-style trimmer, good for puppies and toy dogs. Handle has a round finger holes like scissors, ends open wide, good for getting around curling nails like dew claws. guillotine-style trimmer. Good for small and medium dogs. Squeeze the handle to slice like a guillotine. Blade moves across a loop through which the nail is threaded. Blades can be replaced. Plier-style trimmer. Good for medium, large, and giant dogs. Sturdy and durable, it operates with force. A firm squeeze of the handle makes a cut. Blades can be sharpened. Grinder. Corded or battery-operated tool grinds down nails rather than cutting. Good alternative for thick, tough nails or if your dog dislikes clipping, but the noise and vibration spook some dogs. Grinders take longer, can catch fur and hair, and produce nail dust and generate heat. Starting them young. Starting young is always the answer, Leslie says. Nails can become more difficult to cut as dogs grow and nails become larger and thicker. In addition, aging makes nails stronger and harder. Remember, it's natural for dogs to resist having their feet restrained, so practice and patience prevail, even if you accidentally cut the quick. The occurrence can be overcome with frequent nail trimming with gentle hands and lots of rewards, Leslie advises. Indeed, after a nail trimming session, I not only give my dog a treat, I give myself one. 12 tips for trimming. 1. Ask your veterinarian or groomer to show you how to trim nails. 2. Get your dog used to having his feet touched. 3. Bring out the trimmers and set them near your dog without using them so he learns to relax around them. 4. Work in a well-lit area. 5. Ease into things by massaging your dog's paws. Stay calm and use a soothing voice. 6. If it's too hard to see the nails, carefully trim the fur around the toe with blunt-end scissors. 7. Try gently tipping paws back and out of your dog's view. If your dog wiggles, put him on a leash or drape your arm over his body. 8. Keep blades sharp and hold the trimmer with the blade facing you, not the dog. Separate the toes with your fingers or by gently squeezing the paw pad. Hold the toe while cutting from the top to bottom at a 45-degree angle. 9. Snip a little at a time to just below the quick. Consider trimming only a few nails per session. 10. If you accidentally cut the quick, dab the area with a styptic pencil or flour or cornstarch to help stop bleeding. 11. Offer lots of treats. 12. If it's a struggle, don't risk injuring yourself or your dog. Visit a licensed groomer or your veterinarian. Now I'll read an article from my favorite section of Dogster magazine, WAGS, titled Saving Dogs with Cancer by Annie Phoenix, CPDT-KA. One of the most frightening things a dog owner can hear from a veterinarian is, your dog has cancer. I received that diagnosis from my senior border collie, Echo, last summer. She had a brain tumor, discovered at age 13. Echo got very lucky. We live in Utah, where there happens to be a veterinarian in Salt Lake City who has teamed up with a human radiation oncologist to provide one of the first in-house radiation treatment, pet treatment, centers in the world. Known as high-dose rate, HDR, brachytherapy, this form of radiation delivers radiation by an agile, robotically controlled radioactive seed that delivers a pinpointed burst of radiation directly into the tumor. Dr. Clayton Watkins, owner of VetMed Consultants, and human radiation oncologist and brachytherapy specialist Dr. John K. Hayes, have received state approval for a radiation facility where pets can be treated on-site at the Utah location. I met with both doctors and their medical physicists to discuss care options for Echo. Both doctors preferred to use brachytherapy because it's so precise to treat Echo's brain tumor, but decided that the location of her tumor, just behind her nasal cavity, made it all but impossible to use this form of treatment. Instead, Echo had 3 human-grade external beam radiation treatments. The treatments lasted about 15 minutes each, and she suffered no side effects from the radiation. A few weeks after her last treatment, Echo was back running a mile up and down mountains in Utah. I got my girl back. New cancer treatment options for pets, such as brachytherapy, not only extend the lifetimes of our pets, but they often are much less invasive than older methods. I observed a large male dog receive a successful brachytherapy treatment for a tumor on his lower jaw. Before brachytherapy became a viable treatment option, that dog was likely to get a recommendation to have his lower jaw removed. Brachytherapy is often less expensive than other methods, and many pet insurance companies cover the expense, making it even more accessible for pet owners. Dr. Watkins says that the most common type of tumor he sees in pets are nasal tumors. At VetMed, they treat tumors located in the nose, mouth, limbs, bladder, and urethra, including carcinomas, sarcomas, and the most mast cell tumors. We've seen outstanding results using brachytherapy to target and defeat tumors in humans, Dr. Hayes says. We're happy to see the same good results happening for pets. For more info, visit vetmedutah.com. We'll end today's episode with one obsession in Dogster magazine this week, titled Operation Rescute. I don't know about you, but my first reaction was awe. Founder of nonprofit Operation Rescute, Lori Brown Nagin, found a way to mix adorableness with helping rescue dogs. The nonprofit offers this line of two cute stuffed dogs along with their own books based on a real dog's actual rescue story. Targeted towards children ages 3 and up, the mission is to teach empathy to the younger generation, encourage them to drive the decision to adopt a rescue dog or cat for their next pet. Lori's first rescue dog, Jingles, was and continues to be her muse. Just knowing that there are more than 6.5 million dogs and cats entering shelters each year, and approximately only 30% get adopted, I knew it was time to devote my efforts to helping other pets like Jingles find their loving home, she explains. It is so rewarding to know that you can make a difference in this world and give these wonderful animals the love they so deserve. That's why 100% of our profits go directly to shelters to help with their adoption efforts. Obviously, Operation Rescute is off to a great start. So what's next in the plan? If we create the awareness and get people on board to help save these animals, I hope to expand the rescue line to include the stories of more rescue dogs and cats, Lori says. In addition, I'm hoping to create another media vehicle for rescues, which could involve some film and or television programming. The more the message can grow, the greater the number of animals we can help save. We have to be the voice for these animals left behind and change their lives for better. Each stuffed dog and book retails for $22.95. Follow Operation Rescute Gang at OperationRescute.com and on social media at Operation Rescute. We've run out of time for today's episode of All About Pets. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jen Rogers, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.